Welcome back to the Educated Patient Podcast. I am your host, Mike DeMarco, and today we are joined by Dr. Katie Horner. And our conversation will be centered around menopausal health, hormones, women's health, brain fog, and many other topics that kind of hover within those categories. So Dr. Horner, very excited for the conversation today. Would love for you to just kick us off, set some context of where you're from, how long you've been in practice, and anything else that helps the audience know who you are.
Well, thank you, Mike, for having me. I've been looking forward to this conversation too. I am Katie Horner. I'm a physician assistant, and I've been practicing in primary care medicine for the last 25 years in Omaha, Nebraska. And in the last year, I was able to finish my Doctor of Medical Science degree, which is a PA's terminal degree, through the University of Lynchburg in Virginia. And during that time, I had the pleasure, really, of publishing a research paper on the use of testosterone replacement in women's health. And that's an often overlooked area, so I really enjoyed researching that quite a bit. But I think my main experience just happens through clinical medicine, like 25 years of seeing patients in the office day after day. And honestly, one of my favorite things is being in primary care because I love walking people through different stages of life. I love the idea of vision casting health and wellness for their future and talking to them about like what different interventions can we bring in now, later, lifestyle things that are also going to enhance your life right now, but also help you accomplish goals in the future. So that's a little bit about me and kind of my perspective on medicine.
Great. And so you've been in primary care for your entire career, that's correct?
Yes.
And have you always had a further interest specifically in women's health? Is that something that grew over time? How did that unfold for you?
And it definitely has unfolded over time. I think the longer I've been in medicine and seeing patients kind of go through these different stages of life, a common theme is women in their midlife, like 40s, 50s, coming in and saying, something's off. I do not feel right. Things are changing. And they often have a hard time kind of pinpointing exactly what that is. And they need help because they're like, this is not me. I don't like what's happening professionally, personally. And so I'm able to kind of hopefully help them navigate that season of life. I think too, being a woman that has been in perimenopause herself, I have a certain compassion and empathy for that stage of life. So personal experience and then experience with patients has just made me dive deeper and deeper into wanting to know how I can help people in this phase of life.
Love that. As a man, can you just give me the lowdown on the progression to menopause? I know there's terms such as perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. I'm sure there's individuals listening that aren't women. And even for me, this is like a different world for me. So I'd love to just learn more on that.
Yes. So definitions are very helpful. And I think it's helpful to know that like women, we start our reproductive life with our first menstrual cycle. And that's called menarche. And that typically happens for people in their like early teens or tween years sort of thing. And then we have our reproductive life, which may or may not include pregnancies. And then toward the end of our reproductive life, we enter a season called perimenopause. And that is usually about 7 to 10 years in length. And it is characterized by these fluctuating and pretty erratic production of sex hormones in our body that slowly over time are diminishing. And then when we end up going 1 year without a menstrual cycle, that is the definition of menopause. So menopause is really just like one day in a woman's life. It's the day they go a year without a menstrual cycle. And then from that point on, they're in postmenopause. So those are kind of some definitions. And when we talk about the menopause transition, it's kind of that like late perimenopause into early postmenopause. That typically is going to be like 45 to 55 years of age. It could even extend to like 40 to 60 years of age, and of course has variability because, you know, the average age of menopause is 51 or 52, but I saw someone in my clinic not too long ago that went through menopause at 46. So her definition, you know, things started a little earlier. And then I had another gal that went through menopause at 57. So it can really vary from person to person. But does that at least help kind of put it in context?
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I am obviously there's a ton of physical transformation and implications and things that are happening inside of the body physiologically. Before we get to those, I think those are a little bit more obvious. I'd love to understand what's going on chemically in your brain through these different stages, right? Like and maybe not even just chemically, but the way somebody's mindset is shifting, right? Because this is an identity crisis, I think, for many women as they're like, whoa, life as I once knew it is changing in real time.
Yes. And I love that you actually said identity crisis, because it truly is a crisis of identity for a lot of women. And about 60 to 70% of women in perimenopause and early postmenopause will say that they experience cognitive changes. Something is off cognitively. So like the majority of women are going to have something happen. And they'll often say, you know, like, I really have a hard time with my train of thought, or I'm listening to someone in a board meeting and I cannot follow the string the whole way through. Like, I just get sidetracked so easily. So a lot of attention issues. Some people have a really hard time with like fluidity of speech. And being, they used to be a beautiful public speaker and now they just can't find the words. Mm. Or they walk into a room with friends or at work and they know the person in front of them, they know their face, and they cannot come up with the name anymore. And it's frustrating and it's embarrassing. And so that can lead to anxiousness and a lot of mood disruption. And of course, you can also have mood disruption because of the hormonal changes going on in the brain. So like everything's kind of like intermixed. It's not just, well, it's just this one thing, and if we fix that one thing, all the problems are solved, you know. It affects sleep. So, of course, your sleep cycle is going to affect your cognition too. So there's a lot of things that are mixed in and interplay that cause these cognitive changes. Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, for sure. And you touched on two components there, right? It's what's going on between the ears with the individual, right? Like these things are chemically happening and they probably don't even really know what's going on, but that's playing out in real time for the people that are experiencing them. And so they're also having to navigate the identity that's shifting for the people that they're responsible for, or they are managed by, or insert the blank, right? And
yeah,
it's just, I imagine it's a lot, right? It's a lot to handle. And that's, I'm hopeful that this conversation amongst just the conversation in general around this topic is one little nudge for individuals navigating this to talk about it, because I think that's one of the most powerful ways for individuals that are navigating transition moments or identity crisis or these inflection points that we have in our life is to like not feel isolated on an island, and that there's many other people that are going through this, and communication is, I imagine, one thing that's necessary.
Totally. And some validation too, that they're not going crazy. They're not losing their mind. They're not getting dementia. I mean, women will come in and say those specific things. And so I think knowing that, like, you have like a little bit about the biology is kind of nice to know, because then you know it's like valid what I'm experiencing. We have estrogen receptors all over our brain. And a lot of our memory and our attention and our focus happens in our hippocampus and our prefrontal cortex. A lot of our thermoregulation, like how we maintain our body temperature, it happens in our hypothalamus. These all have estrogen receptors. And if those estrogen receptors are not getting estrogen, then they go into an energy crisis because that estrogen is helping them pull glucose in and turn it into energy so that it can do its job. So if you have these like fluctuating, erratic, unpredictable amounts of estrogen that are diminishing, your brain kind of goes, ah, what am I gonna do? And of course, you know, you talk about like hot flashes and night sweats are common symptoms of menopause as well. Well, that's happening in the hypothalamus. It's not getting the estrogen signal that it was used to getting. And so you get these changes in your thermoregulation too. So I don't know. I think it's helpful to know, oh yes, there is some biology behind why I'm having this experience.
100%. I've been a gym owner for 11 years. I've been training people in fitness for 14 years. And I can't tell you how many times I've worked with a woman who's somewhere in this time frame of premenopause to post, and I've been unable to help them crack the code as to why high intensity interval training just like isn't the thing for them anymore, or why their diet that worked for them for the last 20 years all of a sudden doesn't work for them anymore, or why they're not even eating and I'm still gaining weight. I don't understand. And when you said the glucose bit with the biology, that bell started going off where it's like, maybe that's not the total answer, right? It's probably more complex than that, but I'm sure, I mean, I guess that kind of leads us down this path, right? It's that path of, how does the energy crisis inside the brain have downstream implications on the rest of the body and the stimulus that you're putting on with exercise and food and all of these things?
Oh, everything's connected. An example that I give, but that I've seen in clinical practice a lot of times, is the woman that is experiencing like night sweats, let's say, and maybe some overactive bladder symptoms, both of which can happen during perimenopause and menopause. So she's up multiple times at night with these hot flashes and going to the bathroom. So then she wakes up in the morning and she's super cognitively fuzzy, right? Because without a good night of sleep, you're not going to be cognitively functioning as well. And so she typically starts drinking caffeine, because she's like, I got to have something. I've got to have some stimulant that keeps me on during the day to complete all my tasks. So she does this, feels completely wiped out and tired. So she doesn't exercise because she doesn't have any extra energy for that. But then she gets to bedtime and she's like, I still have that caffeine running through my body. And now I'm also feeling kind of anxious. And so what do? I take a glass of wine or some alcohol to kind of calm things down, which of course disrupts sleep even more. And then we just start the cycle all over again.
Wow.
And so the question is, where do we intervene? Because all those things would help you to live a better life if we address substance use and nutrition and exercise and sleep and hormones. But as a primary care provider, we're like, what's the next best step for you? Where do we intervene? And sometimes it's hormone replacement therapy. Sometimes it's sleep hygiene, sometimes it's exercise, but navigating with that with patients, actually, I enjoy that. So,
as you're telling that story, I like have a very specific person in my head that I've worked with in the past. Mm-hmm. And to me, that means that what you just shared, like, obviously you've seen that cycle or those things happening. Yeah. Those patterns is the word I'm looking for, happen regularly for women.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So anytime that we can help them come out of that and find, you know, a fuller, better life where they're feeling good in their body and wanting to exercise and feeling like, oh, I can tackle this new project at work because I have the energy to do it. Like, I feel like that's a big win in medicine.
Why did you choose to do research and go deeper into testosterone therapy for women?
I was sort of introduced to the idea of testosterone as a female hormone through one of the physicians that I work with. And I have to admit, I was a little like skeptical at first because I'm like, no one has ever mentioned testosterone as a female hormone. And so I'm like, I need to kind of dive deeper into this, discover its impacts on women's health. And what I found almost one of the most surprising things was that testosterone is the most abundant sex hormone for females, more so than estrogen. So you'd think like, what? I thought it was estrogen. And certainly estrogen is very powerful and important, but testosterone is important too. We don't have an FDA approved version of testosterone for women in the United States. There are in other countries around the world, but not here. And so that sort of kind of limits a little bit more our research and our knowledge around it because we don't have something to work with. But back in 2019, there was a global consortium of a bunch of different societies, gynecological societies, women's health societies that got together and said, based on the research we have, it is safe and effective to use testosterone replacement for hypoactive sexual desire disorder, or kind of like a low libido in women, which has profound impacts on their personal relationships with their significant others, with just their sense of self and who they are and their sexuality. And so that's one area where it's often used. Now, having said that, there's a lot of other researchers that would say it also helps brain fog. It also helps bone health, muscle mass, things that are really important as women are aging and going into their postmenopausal years. So more needs to be studied there, but there is indications for its use already.
Is there a perfect window for this as an option for a woman? Like, do you wait until a certain time? Do you exhaust other options first? Is this something that they could do right out the gate if you know you're heading into this season of life?
And by that, are you asking specifically about testosterone or just kind of menopausal hormone therapy?
Testosterone first, and then we could explore
All
the,
of it.
yeah.
Okay. I would say that there is not like a researched window of opportunity that's best for testosterone replacement. There's also not this re any research suggesting that it's unsafe to initiate later in life. But there's not anything saying that it's also good to initiate later in life, or that I mean, we don't really know. But I would say most women choose to initiate the therapy when they're noticing diminishing libido or sex drive, which often happens more in the perimenopausal years. So this is going to be age 40 to 50, let's say. And I will say it. Anecdotally, it seems to be a nice bridge between starting estrogen replacement or progesterone to initiate some testosterone for low libido, but also women report back to me that it really helps their brain fog. It helps the inflammation in their musculoskeletal system. So, again, probably not randomized controlled trials to tell us that it is indicated for those reasons, but women are reporting that it's helping multiple systems of their body earlier in perimenopause.
How does the, so you mentioned you asked a clarifying question. You want to talk about testosterone or menopause hormone therapy? What's the difference?
So I would say, in my opinion, menopausal hormone therapy encompasses estrogen, progestogens, and testosterone. So all three of those sex hormones. Most practitioners think of it as being estrogen and progestins or progestogens, and then testosterone is kind of its own little category over here. And that's probably because, again, we don't have an FDA approved product for women in the United States quite yet. So when I talk about menopausal hormone therapy, I talk to my patients about all of these. And then the conversation is very nuanced and very personalized because based on like symptoms, where you are in pre-menopause or post-menopause is gonna it, how you're bleeding and your cycles are going, like all of this is gonna be put together to decide when we start things, what order we start them in, dosing, route of administration. So there's a lot of conversations that need to be had with your healthcare provider. It's not just a one size fits all.
Before entering the conversation around the hormone therapies, a lot of what I gather from you is that you loved the work that goes into the lifestyle considerations and helping people talk about habit change. Is that the true first step before talking about the hormone therapies, or are they in tandem with each other for somebody that's bridging themselves into the menopausal stage of life?
Again, I don't think it's one size fits all. So some people are, there's so much work they can do with lifestyle modifications and changes, and they're willing, their mindset is there, they're ready to make those changes that they could probably see a lot of benefit by just managing their sleep, like getting some really good sleep hygiene habits going. Other people, the whole reason that their sleep is off are those night sweats. And so if we initiate just a little bit of hormone therapy, we might be able then to help them sleep better, and then they can tackle all those lifestyle changes with more energy. So I would say it's very individualized how we approach that.
Got it. So this morning, my wife and I were working out, and I told her, she was asking me, what do you got going on today? And I shared with her that I was jumping on this podcast, and I was really excited. And I was like, I'm really excited because I think this will be the one you actually listen to. And then she met me with some, what I imagine is probably you navigate this a lot. She met it with, well, yeah, that's cool, but I don't like a lot of speculation, right, around the hormone side, because she's not against medication or pharmaceuticals or anything like that, but she is very much like, okay, if my body wants to produce this hormone, or if it's that stage of life, like our bodies were designed to do that process for a reason. So I don't disagree with it, but I'm a little skeptical as to why we would introduce something that isn't part of the natural thing that our body's been designed for over the last 1,000 years or whatever. What do I tell her? Because she's going to listen to this.
I would say there's no obligation to do menopausal hormone therapy. If you're a woman that says, I don't want to do that, I want my body to function naturally, and if that includes that those hormones diminish, then so be it. I'm fine with that. I will say though that when we look at the postmenopausal years, the incidence of cardiovascular disease, metabolic disease, osteoporosis, and dementia rise. And it doesn't just seem to be related to age. There is a shift that happens at menopause where all of these things increase for women. So we know that postmenopause, for instance, women's lipid profile worsens, their cholesterol gets worse. We know that they're more susceptible to osteoporosis. And working with people in all stages of life, as far as exercise goes, fragility is a huge deal when you're in your seventh or eighth decade of life. It's going to dramatically impact quality of life, what you're able to do. If you sustain a hip fracture, it can be life-threatening. So estrogen is indicated for the prevention of osteoporosis, and then in addition, it's helping manage a lot of those symptoms that are decreasing your quality of life right now. So I'm in menopause, let's say, and I'm not thinking very clearly at work, and so I pull back from my professional life, that decreases my quality of life, maybe. Well, I would say maybe intervening with something that could help cognition, that decreases vasomotor symptoms, that helps protect my bones, is worthwhile and something that you'd be interested in doing. So it's a very personal decision, but I do think there's advantages to considering menopausal hormone therapy.
I imagine some of the speculation is also rooted in people just not knowing, right? Because not knowing what the symptoms are, right? It's like, all right, well, if I do this at 45, right, I want to live till I'm 85. So from 75 to 85, am I going to start to have these symptoms of therapies that I did in my 40s and my 50s? If so, like, I'm not into that.
Yeah. And I would say the longitudinal data that we have, like on estrogen and progesterone, there's a lot of literature on that. And there is conversation that you can have at, like, you know, 65 years old, do we start bringing out, stopping the hormone therapies? Do you want to continue them? And it really depends on what your goals are. So for the woman that has osteoporosis and she's 65, she's probably not one that wants to quit her estrogen at 65 because she's concerned about her bone health for the next 20 years, right? But someone else may say, you know what? My hormone therapy got me through those years that, and life is a little bit calmer now. I'm retired. The cognitive demand that I have maybe is less in my life right now. I'm not having vasomotor symptoms. For a multitude of different reasons, they may choose to discontinue it. And then you can just sort of wean off of that with your healthcare provider's guidance. So I think there's always options to continue or not continue, depending on your own personal goals.
If I am 55 years old and my T scores are rising, I'm not necessarily diagnosed with osteoporosis yet, but I'm teetering, right? The doc's basically like, hey, next year, if we come back and we cross the threshold, I have to put you on some medications. Is it too late for me to explore options to help me reduce my T scores and improve my bone health? Obviously, I'm going to be biased towards, yeah, of course, strength training helps, right? But like, what are some other factors, or how, like, what's the answer to that person who's listening, who's 55 and has a warning sign around osteo right now?
So I think if you wanted to consider menopausal hormone therapy, that it's best done within 10 years of menopause. So there is some research out there suggesting that 10 years post-menopause, we need to have a little bit more conversation around your heart health before initiating hormone therapy. So at 55, if you went through menopause at 51 or 52, you still have time at your advantage there to initiate therapy and get the benefits for your bones. But I would always say it's so important that you are also doing strength training. always so important that you're having a diet that's rich in protein, that you're supplementing your calcium and your vitamin D and getting adequate levels there too. So it's not just, oh, just menopausal hormone therapy. It's like, oh no, we got to be doing these other things too.
How important is magnesium? Because navigating with this with some women when I was still in the gym, using the knowledge that I have with an exercise science background, plus Google, plus some textbooks, magnesium seems to be the first thing that pops to the surface as, like, if you don't do anything, at least start supplementing with magnesium.
For bone health or in general?
In general for bone health, but also for helping somebody who's in the premenopausal stage, or like with a lot of the stuff like the brain or the sleep, but also with bone health, I guess.
So magnesium is like a cofactor in like a zillion different reactions that happen in your body, enzymatic reactions that happen all over your body. So, and it's something that most of us are pretty deficient on. We can get it through our diet. And if we're just loading up on our green leafy vegetables, you know, we'll get it through that source. But most Americans are deficient. And so I think that it is a very reasonable supplement. There's different kinds that you can consume, and they all kind of work a little bit differently in the body. So if you are wanting something that may be even better for your cognitive function, there's something called magnesium L-threonate, and it has a little bit more data on its work in the brain. Magnesium glycinate is kind of a little slower acting, slow release, and it's can sometimes be helpful for a little bit more calming. So people might take that before bedtime as just one more way to try and help them get a better night of sleep. And then there's like magnesium oxide, which tends to be a little bit better for people that are struggling with their bowels and constipation issues, stuff like that. So picking your type of magnesium based on your need might be helpful. You can accomplish a lot through nutrition though too.
Sure. Yeah, that was like a random thought that came to mind when you were describing that scenario a little bit ago with the story of somebody who they need the caffeine to get themselves up and they need the wine to get themselves back down. And mm-hmm. magnesium was something that came up in conversation with them way back when. But obviously food always wins. Real food always wins.
Yeah. Good food, yeah.
I'm curious. So we talked about somebody who's in 55. I'm going to pick another avatar right now.
Okay.
If I am somewhere in the range of 40 to 60 years old and I'm listening to this and you're sparking thoughts in my mind because you're connecting with things that I've experienced, but I've never actually talked to a professional or a provider about these types of things, and I feel like I'm losing my edge. What's the first thing that I should do?
So I think you need to appreciate that what you're experiencing is real and feel confident that it's okay to go into a provider and have a discussion about, I just feel off. And then let that educated, hopefully, provider guide some of the questions and guide you in sort of describing all the different ways that you're not feeling fully yourself anymore. So I think a really good provider that's a good listener and knows how to ask good questions can sort of draw some of that out from you. That is not the case at every office visit with a medical provider. And so if you go in for a visit and you don't feel validated or you feel like you're being dismissed, then it's important that you go to another provider and, you know, ask around. A lot of women have girlfriends and they have, you know, my provider, I liked them or not. So ask around and find someone that you really feel like you can connect with. I even know I don't connect with everybody, just personality wise. Maybe I won't click with someone. And so that's fine. Go find that provider that you click with and let them help you discover what's really bothering you. And then maybe that'll include some lab work and a physical exam and some screening studies and things like that to figure out what's the best path for you.
So
okay,
we covered somebody that was on the brink of osteoporosis, osteopenia, whatever that might be. We covered somebody who is listening and they feel inspired to take action or become more active as a patient. And I would love to just hear, I guess, from your firsthand experience now, right? Because for all these years leading up as a practitioner, you've been able to help people. But how has your firsthand experience maybe shuffled your deck or helped you reimagine the way that you're helping women at this current stage of life versus being from the vantage point of, I'm not there yet, but I know I have the knowledge to be able to help you?
So kind of a little bit of my personal experience
Yeah, how is your
with the
current
medical
personal
transition.
experience shaping the way that you feel like you're providing now versus prior to being at this particular stage as a provider?
Sure. I think just living through perimenopause, and I'm kind of on the cusp of menopause. I personally have experienced some of the different signs and symptoms, and they've been at times really frustrating and a bit disorienting almost. One of the things that has been difficult for me to experience was a little bit of heightened anxiety. And that is not something that I have struggled with throughout my life, but I would try and go to bed at night and kind of ruminate on my worries related to my children, for instance. I even at one point in time felt anxious driving one day, which was really surprising and kind of came out of nowhere for me. And so these were some new things that popped up. And I even took that opportunity to go to my healthcare provider and just say, I am not a PA right now. I am a patient. This is what I'm experiencing. What do you think? Help me out. For me, part of the answer was some estrogen replacement therapy. And I mean, it very quickly made a difference. But that experience for me as an individual just gave me so much more empathy for the women that I see coming in who are experiencing like mood disruptions. We talked about how that estrogen is helping with energy in the brain. Well, if those neurons are not getting energy, then the neurotransmitters are not functioning very well either. And those are so involved in symptoms of maybe depression or anxiety. So to help women in their mental health by addressing menopause, I just feel like I understand where they're coming from.
Got it. Last question. As a human being, not as a practitioner, I'd love to know what excites you most about the years ahead. And I say from the human being lens first, because you are just expressed having more empathy for being a practitioner now. And so at this stage of your career, I feel like there's I use the word reimagined already, but like a reimagining, right, of your career position now. What excites you most going forward, as a human and a professional?
So I think at the very beginning, remember how I said I liked this idea of vision casting with my patients on like, what are your hopes and dreams for the future? What does that look like? And some goals and dreams that I have for my future as a human being, right? It's like I'm looking forward to the day that I get to be a really active grandparent. I am looking forward to walking on my own two legs down the aisle at my grandkids' weddings, right? My husband and I have the goal and dream of hiking a 14er on our 70th birthday, right? And I know that that's going to require cardiopulmonary function and a really strong musculoskeletal system and neurocognitive function, all these different things. So my dreams and goals as a human are very much centered around family, around thriving, around quality of life. And to accomplish that, I know I have to invest in my health right now. And it's going to mean getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. It means good nutrition. It means exercise. And for me, it also includes menopausal hormone therapy. As far as professionally, I continue to aspire to just help men and women where they are and with their goals in mind for the future, but also just their current like capacity, and then seeing if we can't help them grow that just a little bit at a time. So if they don't feel like their capacity for exercise, let's say, is very great right now, what's the next thing we could do? How do we expand that just a little bit to help you thrive and feel like you're extending your health span.
Love it. Yeah. Dr. Horner, any final thoughts?
You know, I want to maybe mention one other group of people that often gets left out of the conversation around menopause, and that's breast cancer survivors. So they often get left out because they don't get the option sometimes of using hormone replacement therapy. And for those women out there that are breast cancer survivors, you have options too. There are ways you can thrive, you can treat these symptoms, lifestyle interventions, as well as different medications that can help you make all your dreams come true for the future too. So I really want those people to also take their menopausal concerns to their healthcare provider, because there are answers for them too.
I think you just planted a seed for a second episode for you and I.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Awesome. Love that.
I loved our conversation today. Thank you so much. This is the first official Educated Patient podcast in the studio. And so it was an honor for you to join me for that. And for all of our listeners out there, if you're looking for more information on this topic or many other common health topics, please visit theeducatedpatient.com. My name is Mike DeMarco. I am your host, and stay tuned for many more episodes coming soon.